Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have a very special guest. Her name is Hillary Jordan. She has written a book called When She Woke. And she's also the author of Mudbound, one of my favorite books. She's here to talk about When She Woke, and it's a new novel from Algonquin. Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Excellent.
You sound excellent. You sounded chipper. I know when we spoke last year, you had just gotten back from your tour. What does that tour take? It must take a lot out of you.
Yes, it was epic. I did 38 events in 2.5 months all over the country. So,
wow.
Yeah, I've been touring like the dead, meaning the Grateful Dead.
Now, Mudbound, I love Mudbound. I can't even tell you how much I love Mudbound. It's such a wonderful, I mean, the characters and everything in that book are just perfect for me. I mean, everything just works completely in that book. You get a lot of attention with that book.
Yeah, I have, actually. It's been a wonderful surprise that it's done as well as it has. For a first novel, it's done exceptionally well.
And you're still getting attention. I make it sound like it was before.
I'm still getting attention, yeah. It's still selling. So we're almost to 200,000 copies in print in the U.S.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. So.
And I pinch
myself daily.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but you're good. I mean, you're really good at what you do. I mean, that's obvious from reading about that. I mean, you know what you're doing. You know.
Well, thank you. But, you know, there are a lot of writers who write great books and they don't, you know, they don't rise somehow.
So why do you think Mudbound got so much attention?
Well, you know, my publisher really got behind the book and I think it just sort of slowly built. It really got it got a lot of love from book clubs and from independent booksellers, and that combination I think really did it. Because you know, book clubs, it's sort of a word of mouth thing, and once the paperback was out, it's just been read by more and more book clubs.
Right, exactly, and it's just what you're really good at is telling. Your characters are so real. That's one of the things that makes you such a great writer. Your characters are real people. I mean, I was reading on the internet a little bit ago, the characters seem to jump off the page. You really feel like you know these characters, and that's so important in a novel. I mean, how many novels do we read? We like, I don't even know who these people are.
I don't read those. I give it about 25 pages, and if I don't love the characters, I go on to something else.
Right.
I don't know. I guess I just try to write the kind of novels that I like to read.
Right. Now, When She Woke, the new one, and is so different from Mudbound. Right away, my mind says, wow, this is like a totally different book. Did you do that purposely?
Yes. I wanted to get out of the past, and I wanted to get out of the first person, and I wanted to get out of Mississippi, but of course I didn't end up getting out of Mississippi. It showed up in part four of When She Woke. But I wanted to do something completely different, and I hope I will always, with every book, want to do something totally different.
So we don't know what to expect from you. It's not like we can say, well, we know what's coming next, another mystery, you know?
Exactly.
Like, what's she going to do next? But that's what's fascinating about writers. What will they write about next?
Yeah.
I mean, Don DeLillo writes a 1,000-page book, and then the next book he writes is 178. So it's like, you know, what's going on? I mean, the literary world is such a whirlwind. I mean, we never know what to expect next.
I think that's good. Keeps you from getting bored, right?
Right. Who would have thought Twilight would be the phenomenon it is? You know, why do some books get so much attention and others get totally overlooked?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a mystery.
But the red-faced woman, you know, we see her on the cover of your book, and tell me where this idea came from. I mean, were you laying in bed and it just sort of hit you that this would be my next novel, or how did it come?
The original spark came many, many years ago, probably at least 10 years before I wrote the book, and it was a conversation I had with my uncle about the drug problem in America. And he's a very brilliant and imaginative man, and he said, well, you know, I think all drugs ought to be legal, but they ought to turn you bright blue so that other people can see you coming and stay the hell away from you. And that idea, right, of what it would be like to be sort of stigmatized in that way really stuck with me. And 10 years later, I'm in grad school, and I'm the same semester I started Mudbound, by the way, And I'm having to produce pages for workshop, and I wrote 4 pages about this woman who wakes up red in a prison cell because she's killed someone, and that's really all I had. That's all that I knew about the story, and I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't have the Scarlet Letter connection or any of the things, so I wrote Mudbound instead, and that took me 7 years, and then I came back to this.
It's such a great story. It's such a resonating story, and there's a lot of fear in this book, fear of this, fear of that. I mean, characters that are afraid, and she's certainly a very fearful person.
Yeah, she at the beginning, she is. I think she has an arc, and I really wanted to. That's one of the things that I was interested in exploring in this book, was the arc of a character who starts off as a very sheltered evangelical Christian, obedient, and show what stigmatization and hardship, how that changes her character almost completely by the end of the book, taking her as far as possible from where she began.
And I grew up as an evangelical Christian, so I know what it feels like. I know the hardships of that. I mean, not being able to watch TV on Sunday, not be able to, you know, things that you wouldn't think of, you know, not being able to do on Sunday, having fun, reading books. I couldn't even read books on Sunday.
Wow.
How horrible is it? Think about that. Going a whole day without reading is just, what a horrible thought.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like that Burgess Meredith character when he breaks his glasses and can't read anymore in the future, and he's the only one left.
Exactly. It's a fate worse than death.
I mean, there's so many things in life that are horrible when they happen, but we don't even think of them happening until they actually do, and that makes them more of a horror. Was this a hard book to write?
Yes, it was.
In what way?
It's a very difficult world to stay in. It's a very dark world. It's a very sort of gloomy view of the future, and also it was hard because with Mudbound I had 6 different minds that I could, you know, leap into, and when I got sick of being a housewife, I could become a soldier or a farmer, and with this book, I was so intimately tied to this one character, and she spends a lot of the book in peril, you know, and so it was just hard to stay in for various reasons, but I wrote it much more quickly than I wrote Mudbound. Maybe that's why, partly why, because I couldn't stay in it. I wrote it in about 4 years, but, you know, probably at least a year of that I was on tour for Mudbound and not writing. So I probably wrote the bulk of the book in about 3 years, which is a lot faster than Mudbound.
Wow. Three. I would have thought you were going to say a year. I mean, most writers will tell you, oh, it takes about a year to write a book. I mean,
No.
With you,
I'm slow.
Slow. But what's wrong with being slow, as long as you're going to write something really good?
Exactly. No, Mudbound took me 7 years, but, you know, I wasn't writing full-time, and with this book, I was able to mostly write full-time.
7 years seems like such a long time to write a book.
Yeah, it did. It did to me, too.
What does writing a book take out of you, and what do you get from it?
Gosh, you know, the hardest part is it's very solitary. It's sort of necessarily solitary, and you live in your head a lot. And that can be, you know, I think you have to be a kind of a person who's comfortable doing that to begin with in order to even be a writer. But even for those of us that, you know, are, I think that can be hard at times. And what do you get out of it? Well, a lot, you know. I mean, it's really it's an exploration of something that, I mean, for me, a book is always an exploration of ideas or things that I've been troubling me, or things I've been wondering about, things I've been curious about. So,
you identify with her a lot? I mean, can you?
With Hannah.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, I identify with all of my characters. I mean, Hannah, some of me is in her, but she's certainly a very different type of person than I am, and a very different background than I had. I did not grow up in that faith, that kind of faith. So, this was a real stretch for me, inhabiting her.
Now, did you have to do some research? Did you have to go to people who grew up that way, or did you talk to people who had, or what did you do?
Yeah, I did quite a bit of research about a lot of stuff, you know, including, the views of evangelicals, and I read a lot, mostly. I read a lot of books. You know, I have family members who are evangelical as well, so I had, you know, some knowledge of it from that. But I did a lot of research. My Google searches ran from everything from, you know, Quebecois profanity to fundamentalist views of women's wickedness to nuclear disaster scenarios, you know. So it was a fun bunch of Google searches. Fun list there.
It's funny, growing up as an evangelical, I mean, if I could identify myself as a woman and I did have an abortion, I would definitely feel like I had murdered a child. I mean, that's how I would feel now. And I can't imagine anybody else feeling any different, because I grew up that way. I was taught, you know, it's wrong to murder a child, even in the womb. You know, it's just wrong to do that. And, you know, I can't imagine anybody feeling any different. I mean, the guilt, I can't imagine the guilt involved in having an abortion.
No, it's, I think a lot of people, even people who are not evangelical, feel tremendous agony about it and guilt about it, and I wanted to portray that.
It's hard. I mean, I can't, and you can never go back. Once you've done it, it's done, and you know, nothing can ever be undone as far as that's concerned. But and that whole aspect of that guilt, I mean, what do you do with the guilt? I mean, what do people do with guilt nowadays? I mean, we all have some kind of guilt. You know,
yes.
And it's you know, some people are just crippled by it.
Some people are crippled by it. Other people find a way to transmute it or to work through it or past it. And I think that's what Hannah does in the book.
Now, when you wrote this book, do you know the whole story as you're writing it, or does it?
No. No, I don't know anything. I didn't know anything.
Well, how do you know you can write the whole book then? I mean, how do you know?
Well, because I had written a whole book before. That was helpful.
Yeah, I mean, but how do you know that the idea that you have can go? You can write a whole book about that. How do you know?
Well, there's a Earl Doctorow quote that really describes my writing process. He said that writing a novel is like taking a long car trip at night. You can only see as far as your headlights, but you can make the whole journey that way. And that's very much what it's like for me writing a book. It's an act of faith. And I felt this was a big idea. You know, sort of at the outset, if it's a big enough idea for a book, or if it's an idea that interests you enough to spend 3 years writing it, you know, that's the number one question.
And it sounds like in your case, you didn't know where it would take you. Obviously, it was.
I didn't
different.
Know where it would take me, but I knew that it would be a book. You know, I knew that it was a book. I just had no idea from one paragraph to the next where I was going for most of it. So that's my process.
Do you see the talent that you have? I mean, do you actually get up in the morning and say, I really am pretty talented? I mean, does that go through your head, or what goes through your mind?
Well, you know, writers are famously insecure creatures. You know, I think it's very cyclical. There are days when I look at what I've written and I think, oh my God, this is just garbage, and why do I ever think, you know, I could be a writer? And then there are days when, at the end of the day, when I look at it and I say, yeah, this is pretty good. But I think it's really impossible. I mean, we're so close to what we do. It's impossible for me to be objective about my work. I don't claim to have any such powers. You know, you're just too much part of you to really have any objectivity at all.
Now, I'm curious about Algonquin. Do they say to you, you write anything you want, or how does that work? I mean, I know with publishers, you know, with an established writer, you know, they want the same kind of book each time. But with you, do you have free rein to write anything you want?
Yes. I mean, I'm a literary fiction writer. I'm not writing genre. They're not, you know, they want my next. So after Mudbound was published, I had about, by the time, you know, the summer afterwards, I had about 70 pages of this, which I sent them, and they bought it and my third book, which, you know, I had no idea at that point what it was going to be. So they've seen me as a writer, you know, in whatever I write. So, I get to do what I want.
That's got to be kind of freeing. You know, you don't have to worry about having a stale character, somebody that you've written about before. You start with all new characters. You can flesh them all out. Do you know a character? Did you know everything about Anna before you even wrote the book, or did you find out things?
Oh, no. I found out, I discovered her as I went. That's the process for me. I discover the characters, I discover the story as I go. It's a very spontaneous process.
So from beginning, so you're learning things. It's like you're reading the book too, because you're learning things about her that you didn't know too. I mean, we as we read the book, we find out more and more about her that we didn't know. So it's fascinating.
Yeah, and by the time you get to the end of the first draft, you know a lot more, and then you can go back and flesh out things, you know. But yeah, it really is a discovery process for me. I actually went to an event with Richard Price, the author of Lush Life, and
he
said that he spent an entire year outlining and thinking about his characters before he ever put pen to paper. And that was just incredible to me, because it's the exact opposite of my process. I sat down and I wrote When She Woke, She Was Red, and I went from there, you know, and I didn't know anything.
Did you know the title of the book? What the title of the book was going to be, or when did that come about? The title. I mean,
the title of the book for many, many years was Red, and then there was a Broadway play called Red, and then there was a Bruce Willis movie called Red, and we decided, my publisher and I decided, there was just too much redness everywhere, so we embarked on a new title search, and my editor came up with this, and I think it's brilliant because. You know, it's the first line of the book, and it's also, the book is a series of awakenings, you know, sexual, spiritual, intellectual, and then literal awakenings in various places. So I think the title is really, really great.
That's fascinating to hear. I mean, that there's so much thought put into the title of a book. I mean, authors just agonize over titles sometimes. I've talked to authors who say, I had no idea what to call this book, or my publisher ended up picking out the title.
I always have a title. Like Mudbound, I had, you know, from the beginning. And there was a time when I thought they were going to change Mudbound to something else, and I really fought against that because I just didn't want it to, you know, it just had to be Mudbound in my mind. But with this book, you know, I held on to Red, but then it felt pretty clear to me, too, that it needed to, you know, that it needed to change. There's just too much ubiquity of Red.
It's so exciting to know. I mean, you say you're already working on the third book, which I'm dying to know what it's about. Even as we speak, I'm thinking, I wonder what it's about. Should I ask her what it's about, or shouldn't I ask her what it's about? Because writers are very protective of their ideas. I mean, there's always that fear that somebody's going to steal it from you or take your idea and do something with it. But
see, I worried about that with this book because it is such a visual idea. It's a movie. Do you know what I mean? It's a very unique idea. With Mudbound, not so much, you know, a bunch of characters on a farm. I mean, I think with this third novel, the idea, it's not so much about the idea as it is about the characters and the story. So, but I'm still not talking about it. Sorry.
We're not going to get anything out of you, are we?
No, we're not going to get it. It's historical, I'll tell you that. I'll tell you that much.
It's funny, you write about Mississippi. The lady that wrote The Help, I'm forgetting her name, Catherine Stockett, has announced she's writing about 1920s Mississippi for her next book.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
She's returning to the fertile ground.
Yeah, I mean, she's such a terrific writer. I mean, who can knock her for The Help? It's just, I'll never forget that book, The Help. Nor will I ever forget Mudbound either. Mudbound has a place in my heart as being, wow, just a terrific book. And in so many ways, you know, how do you describe to somebody how you like a book? I mean, there's just something that works in your mind with the book. I mean, there's something that you attach yourself to, I guess. I just think of Mudbound as being such a wonderful read. I mean, just something you can just sit down and enjoy, and the characters are real. Everything about it is real. And do you feel that way about books, too?
Yes, absolutely.
What was the last book you felt that way about?
Last book I felt that way, probably.
I'm putting you on the spot now.
You are. You know, one of my favorite books, one of the books that really stands out for me that I've read in the last, I don't know, 5 years is Never Let Me Go by Kazuo Ishiguro.
Oh, yes.
I love that book.
Haunting.
You know? And that book has really haunted me and really stayed with me. And the characters, as you say, walked off the page. You know, they felt so real to me.
Do you feel any kind of jealousy? About that.
Oh, yeah. You know, there have been books where I've read them, and when I read The Hours by Michael Cunningham, I was on the plane and I was sobbing. Well, the book is very sad. Mm-hmm. And the stewardess came by and said, "Honey, are you all right?" And I said, I'm okay. And she said, it's just a sad book, huh? And I said, no, it's just I'll never write this beautifully. I mean, there is that sense of when I read something amazing, it makes me want to go and write.
When you think about writing a book, and I think about brilliant writers, and I think they have to be brilliant. Every word has to be brilliant. I mean, not necessarily every word, but it has to all. It blows my mind to think that. How can you write? I mean, is writing as difficult for you as you thought it would be?
Yes, it's very difficult. And a lot of it is, for me, a lot of the magic, a lot of the beauty, a lot of the lyricism comes in the rewriting. I mean, I did 11 drafts of Mudbound. It's not, you know, it's not an accident that it's a good book. I did 11 drafts to make it good, you know?
Do you think that that's necessary for every book?
It's certainly necessary for me, and I think you can certainly read novels that have not been rewritten enough, you know, have been rushed to production, and I think that's you know, pretty common. So, yeah, I think rewriting is absolutely necessary.
So you do.
You know, maybe there are people, you know, the Fitzgeralds or whatever, the Faulkners who wrote. Faulkner wrote As I Lay Dying in 6 weeks. Okay, well, I think that's pretty rare, you know, to have that degree of talent and to have it come out that beautiful that quickly.
No.
I'm envious of those people.
Now, did you do 11 rewrites for When She Woke too?
Eight.
Only eight. So you're getting a little bit shorter each book.
Well, this is a longer book too. This is a much longer book. About 20,000 words longer than Mudbound.
Now, even as we're talking to you, do you have ideas for books that you will write?
No. I mean, I have this idea for the next book. I have a bunch of story ideas. I'd really like to write a collection of short stories at some point.
Why the fascination with that? Why short story writing? I mean,
because you can try a bunch of different things, and you don't have to spend 3-4 years doing it. You know, you can live in them. They're little snow globes, and you can jump around a lot. And I think I like experimenting, and I like trying different voices and different narrative styles. And short stories, you can do that, and it's less of a commitment than a novel.
Do short stories get as much attention, though? It seems like, I mean, when I tell people, you know, a book's out and they're short stories, people don't seem to be as interested in it. Is there? I mean, I like short stories, but the person writing has to be a good writer for me, or I won't even bother reading them. That's how I feel.
Yeah, I think short stories are a hard sell. You know, it's harder to sell a book of stories than it is to sell a novel, and there are wonderful journals that you know, publish short stories, and a few national magazines, but yeah, it's short stories are tough.
Will we see a book of short stories from you? I mean, do you
I hope so. I really hope so.
How does your publisher? Does your publisher open to you writing these? I mean, how do they?
We haven't even talked about it, really. I'm under contract to them for another novel, so you know, I'm pretty sure they want me to get to work on that.
What is it about Algonquin that you like? I mean, Algonquin doesn't publish a lot of books a year. What is it about them that you
like?
Yeah,
they publish 20 to 25 books a year, and every book is important, and they really get behind the books, and it's a family. It's just a great team of people. I know everybody. I know the marketing people. I know, you know, the editorial people. It's you really feel like you're part of something very special. And they really, you know, they send me on book tours, and, you know, many authors, especially first-time authors, I did something like 80 events for Mudbound, you know, and most of those were things that Algonquin sent me to. You know, most authors, most first-time authors maybe get 2-3 events in the home city or near where they live. You know, Algonquin really believes in getting behind its authors, and they get behind independent booksellers. Which I also love, you know, and I visited so many of those people's stores, and I would encourage everyone to buy from independent booksellers, because they need our support, and we need them. We need to have bookstores.
Well, thank you for saying that about my store, Chester County Books and Music. one of the stores that you're talking about, which is it makes my heart jump to hear that. I wonder. When you're writing books, is it joyful for you when you're writing a book? I mean, are you in your element? Are you really, really happy? And is there anything in your life that compares to that?
I'm occasionally joyful. I'm really joyful when I'm done with a draft. I like having written. Occasionally I'm joyful during the writing. Occasionally it feels like singing. A lot of the time it's work, though. But the joy of having written a book or having produced a book and having it in people's hands and knowing that it's being taught in schools or just getting a letter from a fan who it meant something to them, I mean, that's incredible. And there's really nothing else.
Now, was Mudbound on any summer reading lists at all in any of the schools?
Oh, yeah. It was taught in a number of schools, high schools and universities. It was the freshman read for Appalachian State University, and I actually went and gave their convocation address to 4,000 kids. It's been taught quite a lot, actually. It's been taught in American Studies programs, which are a combination of literature and history. It won an Alex Award, which is an award that's given to 10 books a year that librarians feel will be a good crossover, adult books that would be a good crossover for high school kids. And so once it won the Alex Award, I think it got embraced by a lot of high schools as well.
And that's amazing to hear. I mean, it's just so great to know that the people. I can't imagine the feeling of knowing that so many people are reading the book.
The first time I ever got a letter from a teacher saying they were teaching my book, I burst into tears. It's the biggest honor of anything I could have ever hoped for. Really.
What is your background? I mean, where did you start? Where did you go to college? What kind of degrees do you have?
I grew up in Texas and Oklahoma. I went to Wellesley for undergrad, fell in love with the East Coast, embarked on a career in advertising, and I did that for many, many years. And then in my 30s, I sort of had a midlife crisis and got really tired of writing 30-second commercials and wanted to do something more meaningful and more long-lasting. So I quit my job. I was, very successful at what I did. I quit my job, and I started freelancing, and that gave me the time to write stories. And I sent a bunch of them off to grad schools, and I got accepted to Columbia, and I moved to New York. And all that took place in about a year and a half. So I just had an insurrection in my midlife. And so I went to Columbia, and I got my Master's of Fine Arts there, and I started Mudbound there, and I started When She Woke there. And then I, after school, I, finished the book and got it published, the first book. But it was a long road.
Wow.
A long road, yeah.
It's amazing. Every writer's different, what they go through, what their background is. So it's fascinating to hear that, to hear. Did you always know you could write? I mean, was there ever any doubt that you could write?
No, I've been writing since I was a kid. I mean, I've been writing everything, plays and poems and stories and I had a writing career. I mean, I was a professional writer in advertising, and I always sort of had in the back of my head that I wanted to write the great American novel, and then I finally got serious about doing it.
Do you think Mudbound is the great American novel?
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't. I'm not falling into that one. I think it's a great American novel. How's that?
I agree. I definitely agree. it's interesting to hear your answers to the questions. That's why I like to ask some of these questions, because you never know what the author's going to say. Every author says something different, and that's what makes it so. But I mean, even today, do you have doubts? There are the things you think that you need to work on.
In terms of what?
Of how you tell a story, as far as how you craft a story, characterization.
Mm-mm. No, I mean, you have doubts as you're in the process, and every story is different, and every story draws on different skills, and I have different strengths and weaknesses as a writer. I think dialogue is a real strength of mine. I think writing in first person is easier for me than writing narrative. Writing dialogue is easier for me than narrative. But every story has its own requirements of what you have to do to tell it the best way to tell it. So you have to plunge forward anyway.
Do you find yourself writing every day of the week, or do you absolutely take weekends off, or what do you do? I mean, what would we find you doing if you weren't writing?
I write in intense bursts. So I will go weeks without writing. But, you know, when I'm under deadline, I'm writing almost every day. The idea of weekends sort of goes away. That's one of the things I've lost by becoming a writer is, you know, you just don't even half the time know what day of the week it is when you're under deadline and you're writing very intensely. But, you know, I haven't written in months now because I've been on tour and finished the book, and so I'm eager to get back into it. If I go too long without writing, I start to get really unhappy.
Really?
So I've learned that about myself.
But you can't write. You can't write at all when you're on tour.
No, I can't. I really can't. I have to have some. It's too chaotic. You know, I have to have a certain amount of peace and stability. And you can't write when you're in sort of unsettling hotel rooms and boarding aircraft and, you know.
What was the hardest thing?
Dealing with Homeland Security.
Right, exactly. What was the hardest thing to write from When She Woke? I mean, was there a certain part that was hard, or were there parts that were hard to write?
The whole book was pretty hard to write, right up until the very end.
The guy that she falls in love with, I just love the way you do that. I mean, that we don't know at first who it is, and then we suddenly realize, oh, now we know what happened. You know, we suddenly, it becomes clear in our mind. What, I don't want to give too much away, but I love the fact that, you know, I like his character, even though he's a very sleazy character. Isn't
that weird? A lot of the ladies don't like him very much. I tried to make him sympathetic. You know, I mean, he's flawed, but I think he's a sympathetic character. He's not a bad guy.
No, I agree. I think there's something romantic about him.
Yeah, a lot of the women hate him. It's interesting.
Why do they say they hate him?
They hate him. They think he's a hypocrite. They think he's weak. They think he's, you know, they don't like him. I'm fond of him.
Do you have deep religious beliefs? I mean, what is your life? I mean, do you go to church?
No. I'm a somewhat spiritual person. I'm still trying to figure that stuff out. It was interesting writing this book because it really made me think a lot about faith and consider faith from totally alternative points of view. And but yeah, I'm still figuring that out.
It's interesting because I mean, there's why do we being shunned? Can you imagine the being? I mean, it's I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but being shunned from society like she is, what would that feel like? I think about that a lot. I think about, you know, what if I were like that? What if I looked different? Would people not talk to me? Would everybody ignore? Imagine the feeling of being ignored by everybody, basically everybody, mm-hmm. which she goes through in this book.
Or and, being despised by everybody.
Yeah, even worse. I don't know what
would
be.
Part of the inspiration for this, too, came from, you know, Megan's Law, in which basically sex offenders are tagged. And, you know, if you are a sex offender and you move to a community, everyone in the community is informed. Can be, you know, you're sort of informed that someone's living there. And often they end up living in, often they end up being ghettoized. And that was part of the stuff going around in my mind when I was writing this. Is, you know, on the one hand, yeah, if anybody messed with my kid, I'd go for my shotgun. But on the other hand, there's something unsettling about that law, you know.
And with the whole
necessary, but unsettling.
And with the whole Penn State thing that's going on now, and, you know, I always think to myself, why don't people have more sympathy for the person doing it? And because it's such a cruel act that they've done. Yes, I agree. The cruelty is over and beyond anything you can even imagine, but do I feel sorry for the person? Yeah, in some level I do feel sorry. Is it wrong to feel sorry for somebody?
Yeah, it's complicated stuff.
Very. But it's good that we think about these things so much, you know, and they go through our heads. And is your third book going to be as hard to write as these two?
I hope not. But I have a lot of research to do for it.
Have you already picked a title?
No, I have not. And that's the first for me. Normally I have the title from the outset, so I don't have a title. I don't know enough about it yet to have a title.
Are you neurotic as a writer?
Yes, very.
you say that without even thinking.
Yeah.
What do you wish different about your... I mean, is there something that you wish you were that you're not?
For this book, I really want to have more joy in the process and less fretting, you know? I'd really like to get through the first draft without rewriting as much as I do going along. I'd really like to just kind of get to the end before I really start tweaking and fretting over the sentences. I don't know if that's possible. I did better with this book than the first book, so we'll see. But, yeah, I'd like to have more joy in the process of writing this book.
I'm curious what... Right, absolutely.
Less angst, more joy.
When you did the book tour, and had people read Mudbound, a lot of the people that you talked to on the book tour?
Yeah, they had, yeah.
I was curious what their reaction to When She Woke was as opposed to Mudbound. Were they surprised at how different it was, or what was their reaction?
Yeah, I think people were surprised by it. But, you know, the books do have some similar themes. You know, they're both about stigmatization to a certain extent and discrimination on the basis of color. And they're both about women who are struggling to sort of for self-definition in cultures that would deny them that, for self-realization.
Well, do you think that'll be a theme in a lot of your books, even the ones that you haven't published yet?
I don't know. I definitely, yes. Discrimination definitely interests me. You know, I'm Southern, and I guess it's, you know, I think race is sort of our great unhealed wound. And so, yes, I'm definitely interested in that theme. But my next book is going to center on a young man, so we'll see.
So how do you get into
how that changes?
How do you get into the mind of a young man, not being a young man yourself?
Well, you know, same way I got into the mind of Ronsell Jackson, a black soldier and a black midwife and a white father. And I mean, it's my job.
It's a challenge.
The minds of different people.
Do you like the challenge of it?
It's what makes it fun.
The challenge is what makes it fun?
Mm-hmm.
Will we ever see movies of Mudbound or When She Woke, do you think?
I'm hopeful.
I'm hopeful, too.
I'm hopeful. So I'll talk more about that later.
Uh-oh. It sounds like something's in the works that you can't talk
possibly
about.
Possibly, yes. Possibly, yes.
I hear it. We hear it in your voice, Hillary. There's no way you can disguise that. Do you hope, I mean, obviously, it's going to take a few years for the next book, or is it? I mean, we can't expect a book next year.
No, you cannot.
So we're disappointed right now, but that's all right because we have something coming, you know, and we have something to look forward to.
Well, thank you.
What do you look forward to?
You know, I look forward to getting into this next story and, plunging into something new. You know, you live with these characters for so long, and it's exciting to just go somewhere totally different.
Do you get to travel a lot?
I travel a lot. I go to artist colonies a lot. I've been to colonies all over the world, and I'm going to keep applying for those because I find that I do my best work at artist colonies.
Are you a good artist? I mean, can you draw?
No. Yeah. No.
I don't know what made me ask that question.
I paint with words. That's I guess my artistry. I have one.
But it's beautiful, though. What you do is beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Do you look at every word that you write and make sure that it's right? I mean, do you really look at every word?
Yes.
A lot of, I mean, authors nowadays, I mean, some of them write two or three books a year. How could they possibly look at every word? I mean, there's
They can't. You can't.
You wonder what goes through their, I mean, it's all about selling the most books nowadays, it seems like. Everything is sales. You know, how much can we sell? How much money can we make on an author, you know?
People writing commercial fiction have a whole different set of, you know, problems and goals than I do.
What demands do you have on yourself? I mean, when you write a book, what do you think? I have to do this. Are there any things that you know what I'm asking?
I have to tell a great story, you know? I mean, I'm a storyteller, first and foremost. And I want to keep my readers completely involved and keep them turning the pages. And I want the, sense is to be beautiful.
Is that hard to do? I mean, is that, do you find that hard to do at times? I mean, are there pages that you write and you think, I don't know if people are going to like that?
I don't think about it so much as I don't know if people are going to like it as I do, I'm not happy with it yet. I write to make myself happy with it.
How do you know when it's completely the best you could ever do? How do you know when you're done a book? I guess that's the question.
When they take it from you and print it.
Then you're done. But I mean, are there, when she woke now, are there things about it that you're still...
I would go back and, I would keep revising. If they didn't force you to stop revising, I think I'd never stop. So it's good that the books get published, you know.
It's definitely good, and what a treat to be able that we're able to read them. I mean, I can't wait to see what you're going to write next, and that's the thrill for the fans to know what's my writer going to write next. I mean, and the fact that I get to talk to the writers and ask them about these books is even more of a thrill. I mean, what fan wouldn't love to talk to their favorite writers? I mean, do you have writers that you can't wait to see what they're going to write next?
Yes.
Can you name one or two?
Yeah, I bought the new Ann Patchett without even looking at it. And the new Ishiguro, Marilyn Robinson, I'll buy whatever she writes. Yeah. I have a few writers like that.
That's cool. Have you ever met any of them?
I've not met those three, no. I used to feel that way also about Pat Conroy. I'm going to get to meet him in the spring, because he's going to be the keynote at the Savannah Book Festival.
And
I'm
going to
be appearing there.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to meeting him.
Ask him if he's writing a new book. I want to know. That's what I want to know, because I love
this. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure he is.
I love... Do you have certain genres you read a lot of?
I read a lot of literary fiction. You know? That's really... I don't read a whole lot of genre fiction.
Because you don't like it, or you're doing...
I used to read a lot of science fiction. I find that the writing quality is just not in genre fiction, most genre fiction. The writing's not good enough. The writing is lazy. You know, there are exceptions. I love P.D. James. She writes wonderful mysteries, and she's a fantastic writer. And, you know, Ursula Le Guin writes amazing science fiction. And George R.R. Martin writes great fantasy. But I think for the most part, a lot of the stuff that I would call genre fiction is not well enough written. And those lazy sentences drive me nuts.
Yeah. Do you find yourself doing that, going to other books and saying, oh, I could write better than that?
No, I just find myself putting them aside because I can't stand it.
It drives you crazy.
It drives me nuts. Yeah, it really does. And it didn't, you know, I wasn't always, I think becoming a writer, it changes the whole way you read. It spoils you for the bad stuff, that's for sure.
What do you do when people say to you, and not that this ever happens, and it would never happen with me, but what when people say they hate your book, has anybody ever told you they hated your books?
I'm sure. I mean, I've gotten bad reviews.
What does that do to you, and how does that affect you?
Oh, it's not fun. I mean, I don't think anybody likes, you know, being reviled. but you know, you have to put it in perspective. I mean, I've gotten a lot more good reviews than bad. So, you know,
what do you ask?
Not everybody gets what I'm trying to do. You know,
right? What do you get asked a lot, and what are you tired of being asked?
With Mudbound, I got, which one is your favorite character? I got that question, I don't know, 500 times on book tour. And my answer was always the same, which was, they're all my children. You know, I love all my children. With this book, you know, you do get a lot of the same questions. You know, what inspired you to write it? Did you set out to write a political novel? You know, you do get a lot of the same stuff.
I think it's wonderful. I don't care. I love the way you write. I just love, and I don't care what you write about, as long as it's interesting. It has to be interesting to me. Like you said, the first 25 pages, if they're not interesting, you put the book down and you go on to the next book.
Yeah, because there's too many great books.
And you would miss out on some great books. Are you an emotional writer? I mean, do you find yourself going through a lot of emotions when you're actually writing? Do you cry a lot? Do you?
Yes. Yes. It's very deeply, you know, I'm writing about pretty intense stuff. So I think if I didn't care enough about it to feel emotional about it, then it wouldn't have any power on the page.
Do you have to feel what she's feeling? I mean, is that necessary to write well?
Well, you have to be able to project into what somebody else is feeling. I don't think you have to have felt it yourself in order to imagine it. Although that certainly helps, you know, if you can identify in some way.
Right, absolutely. I hear a siren in the background.
Yes, New York City.
Why is New York City so conducive to writing? I'd love to know. I mean, are there certain areas of the country you write better in?
No. I mean, I've written all over the world. I wrote about Mississippi and Spain and in Maine and in Virginia and really everywhere but Mississippi.
But are there certain places that inspire you, right, that you're there?
Beautiful places are very inspiring to me. And I go up to Maine every summer, and my aunt and uncle have a cottage up there, and that's an incredibly inspiring place for me because it's just very serene and very beautiful, stripped away. All the nonsense gets stripped away. But see, I love the city, too. It's very, the city is chaotic, and that's inspiring in a different way. It's creative. It's alive.
You seem like a very calm person. I mean, just talking to you for the last 45 minutes, you're very calm. Are you always like that, or are you...
No, I wouldn't say I'm always like that.
But I sense this calmness about you, you're sure about what you're doing. I mean, nobody's always sure, obviously. We all have doubts, but...
Well, having written two books has made me calmer about it, I think. You know, and then they've both been pretty successful and well-received, and that helps.
You say you write for yourself. You're writing what you would like to read. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
But do you ever think about how you could write so more people would read it?
No, I did that. You know, I did that for years as an advertising copywriter, and I decided that when I wrote fiction, I was just really not going to think about that. Again, I'm not writing commercial fiction.
Right.
Yes, I hope people will read and like my stories, but I'm not writing to please anybody but myself, really.
But at the same time, you write stories that people do love, which, I mean, you end up doing it anyway, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Because I love reading them. I can't wait to read your next book. I think that's important. That's important to a fan. It's to know that we can trust you as a writer.
Yeah, it's. What can I say? It's. I'm glad you can. And I try, you know, for what I call narrative authority. When I teach, that having narrative authority, like this ability to take the reader by the hand and bring them along in a way that they feel confident that you're going to take them somewhere interesting, is really important. So in that sense, yes, I try to bring the reader with me, but I'm bringing them with me on where I want to go.
Right.
Rather than taking them somewhere I think they want to go.
Now, when you look at the cover on this, the red woman's face, I mean, right away you say, why is her face red? I mean, that's what draws you into this book. It just, you know, what's going on?
The cover's amazing.
And it's like, wow.
I really lucked out with this cover.
It is, and the book's just as fascinating as the cover, and that's what makes it so good. Do you think within the next 3 years we'll see a book from you?
I hope so. I think 3 years is a good amount of time. So,
can you tell I'm anxious to read another book? Can you tell? Does that feel good to know that?
It's coming across.
When I get excited about a writer, I really get excited. And, you know, I can't help it. That's the way I am. And people will say to me, why are you so fixated on one writer or another writer? It's just, we like what we like.
What we like, exactly.
And there's nothing you can do to change that. You can tell me all the time that I should be reading another writer, and either I will or I won't, and I may not feel the same way you do about it. But it's wonderful. That's the beauty of reading. Everybody reacts differently to a book.
Well, thank you for liking my work, and for interviewing me today.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful time. I really appreciate it. The book, again, is called When She Woke. It's out from Algonquin. It's in all your bookstores. It even has a nice texture to it. I love the texture of this book.
It feels like skin. Isn't it?
Yeah? It's a weird feeling, but it's a great feeling.
And if people want to find out more, they can go to my website, which is hillaryjordan.com. There's interviews and excerpts and so on.
Are there any audios of your books, by the way?
Yes, they're both out in audio.
Oh, wow, cool. And e-books also?
And e-books also.
Wonderful. Well, we've been talking to Hillary Jordan about her book, When She Woke, and thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
And this has been David's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.